Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The 30 most powerful unions in America. Federal government fighting child labor in Central America. And today on the show, the operating engineers in Pennsylvania and Delaware and what the Teamsters are doing in Milwaukee. Welcome to the Thursday, December 30th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. Our first guest today comes to us from the operating engineers. This would be Local 542. Website is IUOE542.com. Jim Ashone will be joining us. Now, they're based in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. They cover pretty much all of eastern Pennsylvania and Delaware. And we're going to check in on their apprenticeship program, what projects are coming up in the new year, especially the work outlook. And this is a statement from the national president of the operating engineers, James T. Callahan. He's the general president, and he is really excited about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which was signed into law several weeks ago. Jim says the following: the operating engineers applaud the hard work and resolve of President Biden and Speaker Pelosi to make passage of the bipartisan infrastructure framework a reality and to deliver for the American people. That's what people want. They want our politicians to deliver, and that's exactly what happened here. He goes on to say that this legislation will enable us to build world-class infrastructure that is safe, that's number one, reliable, number two, and more resilient. It'll create hundreds of thousands of family wage jobs, build healthier communities, and reduce congestion and gridlock. This investment will help train and employ tens of thousands of skilled tradespeople. That includes thousands of operating engineers in every corner of the country. It will rebuild the nation's crumbling public works and solidify the foundation upon which America competes in the global economy. Amen to that. So Jim is going to give us an outlook of his neck of the woods. Again, that's Eastern PA and Delaware. And that's pretty much a thriving area. And the operating engineers are pretty excited about that. Later in the show, Thomas Bennett will be joining us on behalf of Teamsters Local 200. A little background on Tom. He's a third-generation Teamster, being part of the Teamster Union for about 30 years, duly elected officer of Local 200 for five three-year terms, and he begins his sixth three-year term next week, well, this Saturday, January 1st. As secretary-treasurer of Local 200, he oversees a membership that includes approximately 4,000 members that covers southeastern Wisconsin, with the largest density being in the Milwaukee area. He's also the secretary-treasurer of the Wisconsin Teamsters Joint Council number 39 that represents the entire state of Wisconsin. Recently created pension fund for the Teamster brother and sisters employed by Kroger at primarily grocery warehouses throughout the Midwest. He was involved in that. So he's going to touch on all these issues. The background of Milwaukee. Milwaukee's a pretty strong union town. He's very fortunate to be working there. We'll get into food processing, chocolate producers, police, first responders, dairy producers, to the drivers in construction and freight. Talk about a broad audience there. And we're also going to touch on the upcoming retirement of President Hoffa. Now, that's going to happen in March, and there's going to be some new blood in the Teamsters. President-elect Sean O'Brien out of Boston, and the general secretary treasurer, who is Fred Zuckerman. Fred's from Louisville, Kentucky. And again, they'll take over at the end of winter, beginning of spring. Big changes in labor. So Thomas Bennett, secretary treasurer of Local 200. Website is TeamstersLocal200.com. Got an interesting analysis here. And this is courtesy of the operating engineers, by the way. 30 most powerful unions in America. This really caught my attention yesterday, and I want to share it with you. And the article kind of points out what's happened to organized labor over the last 30, 40 years, and how labor developed our middle class, and a strong one. And as you know, starting back in the early 80s, again, I always blame Reagan when he fired the air traffic controllers, and I'm not alone on that opinion. When he fired the, 10, 15,000 air traffic controllers, that sent a message to corporate America that you can dispose of your union contracts. And they did. They did. From 1983 to 2015, union roles shrank by nearly 3 million workers, even as over 45 million more people joined the workforce. And the proportion of workers in a union was cut in half over that same period. So go banking rates, which pretty much analyzes, of course, banking, and they're referred to by Wall Street firms. They took a look at membership numbers from 78 different unions. This was all available through the Department of Labor, and they found 30 that still have at least 100,000 members. I'm going to run them down here. Many of them are sponsors of America's workforce. Number 30, by the way, the Painters and Allied Trades, International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT. Total membership right now, 111,138. We have to get Jimmy Williams Jr. on, see if that's actually accurate, especially going in the new year with this infrastructure bill. Let's see. We have the letter carriers, National Rural Letter Carriers Association. They have 114,000. The iron workers, proud sponsor of the show. They're number 28, and they're at 128,511. And most of these are affiliated with the AFL-CIO, I might add. National Nurses United, that's a growing one. They're at 130,515. Transport Workers Union of America, TWU. Mass Transit, Railroad, Airline Workers, they're at 134,000. IATSE. We featured a number of shows with the stagehands unions. They're at 145,000. Let's see. The Amalgamated Transit Union, representing many of the bus drivers, subway. They're just shy of 200,000, and they're number 23. The International Association of Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transport Workers, better known as SMART. Total membership, 203,000. Number 21, the American Postal Workers Union, APWU. .org, and they're at 235,000. And here's my union, the Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of TV and Radio Artists, SAG-AFTRA. They're at 243,000 members. And yes, they're affiliated with the AFL-CIO. Let's see, we have the National Association of Letter Carriers. See, there's two of them. There's the rural group, and then there's the National Association, NALC. They're number 19 at 290,000. Unite Here, textile, garment, manufacturing workers, hotel, restaurant. Let's see, they're at 301,886. Firefighters, number 17, 314,000, almost 315,000. There's another sponsor of the show, the American Federation of Government Employees, number 16. They're at 332,977. Let's jump to number 14 here. We got the United Association, another sponsor, and their full title is this: the United Association of Journeymen and Apprentices of the plumbing and pipe fitting industry of the United States and Canada. That's a long title. We call them the UA, United Association. They're at 355,000. Operating engineers, who we're going to feature on the show today. Nationally, just shy of 400,000, 394,493. UAW, just shy of 400,000. They're number 12. Carpenters and joiners, 500,000. The machinists, they're number 10 on the list, 573,000. Communication Workers of America, another sponsor, 661,604. They're number 8. IBEW, they are at, wow, 672,551. They're number 7 on the list. Food and commercial workers, now we're getting over a million here. UFCW, 1,248,117. AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, 1,327,379. Can you imagine counting all these? Let's see. The Teamsters, who will feature on the show today, overall, 1,389,454. They're growing, too. I mean, especially if they organize at Amazon. American Federation of Teachers, 1.6 million, 1,677,000. Service Employees, number 2, SEIU, 1.9 mil. And number 1 on the list, and this is interesting, they're not affiliated with the AFL-CIO. That's the National Education Association, NEA, 3,002,516. So those are the 30 most powerful unions in America, and I have to thank the operating engineers for supplying that list. U.S. Department of Labor has announced the award of an $8.4 million cooperative agreement to the Pan American Development Foundation to empower civil society organizations and worker groups to address child labor, forced labor, and other unacceptable working conditions in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. The project will promote gender and racial equity and prioritize people of African descent and indigenous communities. Administered by the Department's Bureau of International Labor Affairs, the project will work with civil society and workers' organizations in those three countries, again, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, to bolster their collaboration with government agencies, along with the private sector and other stakeholders to, number one, protect labor rights and reduce child labor and forced labor. That's exactly why those people are coming to America. Do you realize that if we fix it there, perhaps they'll stay there? That's the hope in all of this. The project is part of a more than $20 million commitment by the department to promote respect for and compliance with labor rights in the region. The funding is part of the Biden-Harris administration's Root Causes of Migration strategy, which seeks to address underlying factors contributing to increased levels of migration. In Guatemala, listen to this. In those three countries, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras, more than 1.4 million children, 1.4 million, are engaged in child labor. Many of them indigenous, Afro-descendants, populations that are often among the poorest, most marginalized groups with limited access to education, health services, and housing. They're also more likely to work in informal jobs without Social Security, without health benefits, and other employment protections. Now, the project will provide direct training, mentorship, and small grants funding to at least 45 civil society and workers organizations from across 6 departments in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, where people live, the main populations. They will also train, this project will train 1,200 individuals representing civil society, government, and the private sector on labor rights and inclusion. And these individuals will apply their knowledge and build national and multi-country coalitions to increase collective actions to protect workers, reduce child labor, and improve working conditions. Kind of like what unions do collectively. Collectively get together to make the population that's suffering right now, we're talking kids, to rise up, get better wages, stop the madness with child labor, number one. So this is one to watch. Again, this comes from the U.S. Labor Department, headed by Marty Walsh, who comes to us from Labor's International. That guy is changing a whole lot in America and beyond, when you think about it. All right, we have to take a break. The Operating Engineers, Local 542, coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters, we care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at afge.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast, which is also our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. And you can find more at ulagency.org. Dave Meganhart, their executive director, will be joining us next Wednesday on the show. Hard to believe that the year is almost over. Let's go to line number one, and I believe we had this gentleman on some months ago. I believe it was September. Jim Ashone is his name. He's a business agent for the Operating Engineers, Local 542. Website is IUOE542.com. You can also check him out on Facebook. And he's here to give us an update of what's going on, especially now that we have this Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, now law in America. Hey, Jim, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Flash, how you doing today?
Good. I did pronounce your name correctly. It's Ashone, right?
Yep, that's it.
Good. So you are the business agent, 15 years with the Operating Engineers. What made you get involved in the Operating Engineers? It was a family type of thing or what?
Yeah, I got a family in a bunch of different trades. I had an uncle who was a plumber. My father was an iron worker. My grandfather and my uncle, Vincent, are both operating engineers. So just kind of seemed like a logical move. Once I got out of high school, I worked some non-union construction for a few years and then transitioned to my apprenticeship program. And now here I am.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had people on the show said, well, I started working at a non-union company, and then I realized I had to find a union company. Maybe you could tell our listeners, let's pick it up right there, the differences. And I'm sure you learned those right away, didn't you?
Yeah, it's a staggering difference to go from the merit shop to a union shop. As far as employment, I mean, you know, one of the big things you lack with the merit shop and to a union is the familial bond you have with your union brothers. When you're working at a merit shop, everybody's constantly in competition with each other for vacation days, raises, good projects to go on, prevailing wage projects to go on. When you belong to a union, the biggest thing is everybody's kind of the same. I mean, you might have a little bit of competition as far as skill level, just to increase your own reputation. But really, these guys, you know, you end up being best man at their weddings, you know, godfather to their children. You know, you become friends and family with these guys. And that's not all the time the environment when you work in a Merichap contractor. My experience has been a lot better with the members of not only my local, but the other tradesmen out on the job, you know, in comparison to when I worked for the merit shop. There just wasn't that friendship or that bond with the guys.
Yeah.
That was one of the most glaring differences for me.
And it just creates for a better work environment, doesn't it?
Yeah. It keeps morale on the job real high. And that's kind of like an unspoken part of productivity. You know, if you're happy at work, you're going to get more done for the contractor. And I think some of the contractors realize that.
How is your relationship with the contractors? Now, your jurisdiction for 542 is Eastern PA and Delaware. Now, you just handle Delaware, is that right?
Yeah, yep. I just work in Delaware, and our relationship with contractors down here is really good. We, a few years ago, worked with the larger union contractors in Delaware, and they established the Delaware Union Contractors Association. And it's not a bargaining body. Like, we don't do our contract negotiations with them. It's just an association similar to the Building Trades and Construction Council that they go and handle political affairs so they can be lock and step with the unions when it comes to, you know, advancing our political agenda, working to try and get projects to go union with the GCs and the CMs out here. And everything just kind of gels a lot better than it has in the last 10 or 15 years now that they've started that organization as well.
That's good. You still got a lot of non-union facilities over there that's causing some disruptions?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're always going to have that. And it kind of makes everybody play fair when you know you have that competition. It's something that we're working with the clients and the CMs and the GCs to try and make them aware that when you go union, you get a better product in the end. And we actually had a meeting maybe 6 weeks ago with a very large construction manager here in Delaware about lack of manpower. They're experiencing a significant lack of manpower from their merit shop and non-union contractors. So they wanted to have a meeting with the building trades to see if they could work with us to try and shore up their needs for manpower on some of their more critical path projects. So I think, you know, the unions definitely have a real advantage in today's labor market because we have the availability of skilled workforce. Guys, they can't provide it.
What are you hearing about retirements? I know a lot of baby boomers. I mean, the baby boom generation is 1946 to 64. And those born in that time period, I mean, they're at that age right now that they're leaving the workforce. How is that affecting you guys over there in Eastern PA and Delaware?
Well, there's two ways you can look at it. You know, you can look at it that you're losing valuable members of your organization that go out and they perform the work and they've got the skill and the experience to help bring the younger generation up. I try and look at it as an opportunity to bring new members in. When you lose a guy to retirement, you're not really losing them. Those guys still participate. They still come to union meetings. They still go to our training facilities. And when we need them, they go back out to work. So the younger members are still gaining a lot of knowledge from our pensioners. But the pensioners deserve to retire. That's why they need the union. You know, right. We're actually seeing a lot of guys retire earlier than the curve. You know, guys are retiring at 55, 56, 57 years old, and they're not waiting until they get to their 60s anymore. And that's what it's all about. You know, we provide that for our members. And they should be able to enjoy it. So I try and be a little bit more optimistic about it than maybe some people would be. But like I said, for me, it creates an opportunity. Young people come in every day. They want to fill out applications. They want to know how they can get into the union. And when you lose a guy to retirement, that gives you an opportunity to bring another member in.
Mm-hmm. Well, the union allows that person to retire at 55, and that's amazing. I mean, that's so young in today's standards. Do you have a lot of that going on over there? Are people retiring before they reach the age of 60?
Oh, yeah. We see, I mean, I don't want to say it's a lot. I only deal with the state of Delaware, but we see a lot of guys between 55 and 60, they do opt to take advantage of the opportunity. and just enjoy the last half of their life, you know, with all the fruits of their labor.
Let's talk about the apprenticeship program there. I want to zero in on that because, you know, Jim, especially with this Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. In fact, I was reading at the top of the show the statement from your general president, James Callahan, pretty excited about the future, and I want to touch on that. And in order to build that future, you got to get these programs, the apprenticeship programs, ramped up. Maybe you can tell our listeners what the program is like over in 542, and are you attracting enough people in your estimation?
Our program is very competitive. We take on obviously COVID has had an impact on a non-COVID year. We were taking between 1,500 and 3,000 applications for about 120 to 150 positions. So the program starts with the interview process, and there's a general knowledge aptitude test, and trustees make their selections, and the apprentices start their training, and they spend as much time as possible at the training site. They get a mix of classroom and in the field instruction, and then when they go out to work, they also get the what I feel is the most important part is on the job training. They go out and they're partnered up with experienced operators on critical path projects, and they learn a variety of skills, especially when it comes to what a lot of people consider the specialty type equipment. You know, your drill rigs and pile driving operations, paving operations, stuff that not everybody wants to get into, and not even all the contractors perform that kind of work. So there's programs spread out over 4 years. Apprentices are, you know, required to do things like get a CDL. They got to maintain a 40-hour hazmat license. They got to have process safety management cards, OSHA cards, real certification heavy to prepare them for when they do graduate and they go on that para-body journeyman out of work list. So it's a really good program. I've gone through it, and it really, when I got in, they told me it's a leadership program. You're really going to get out of it what you put into it, and that's the truth. And we encourage our apprentices to put as much into that program as possible, to spend as much free time as they have participating in the extra activities, going to community service projects. You know, our local goes throughout Pennsylvania and Delaware and builds parks. They work at schools and put in ball fields and, you know, those type projects. And that gives you a really solid foundation to build on, not only for your skill for operating equipment, but for also being a member of the local union.
Mm-hmm. Well, a sense of community, too. I mean, you're rebuilding the community, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. We had those guys work, and I was fortunate enough when I was an apprentice to work on a couple of projects for schools that maybe they didn't have a referendum that passed, or they just didn't have the funding they wanted to put a park in. So they would partner up with the building trades, and, you know, we would go in there and they just pay for materials, and the union provided the equipment and the manpower, the fuel, and we helped them get the permits. And, you know, by the end of it, you had apprentices that would go in and their skill would be, you know, low to medium, and they would come out higher skilled, and the community got their park or, you know, their facility rehabbed or whatever it was. So it's a really good way to cultivate the sense of community and the skill at the same time.
Yeah, it goes back to the family atmosphere that is so, so dominant when it comes to unions versus a non-union facility. All good, all good. Jim, I got to take a quick break here. You can stay with us. I want to talk about the future of work over in that area in Eastern PA and Delaware. Can we do that?
Sure.
Jim Ashone is his name. He's a business agent at the Operating Engineers, and the website is IUOE542.com. That's local 542. 6,000 members, I might add. All right, later in the show, Thomas Bennett will be joining us, and he's going to be coming from Milwaukee, Teamster Local 200. And they've got about 4,000 members. We'll be back in a few minutes on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those five-star ratings, so keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Jim Ashone. Jim is business agent out of Operating Engineers Local 542, and he's based in Delaware. They represent Eastern PA and Delaware. I was correct. You said 6,000 members in those two states altogether. Is that right?
Yeah, just a little bit over 6,000, 6,200, somewhere in the neighborhood.
62. Okay, good, good, good. Jim, I want to talk about the future here, especially with this infrastructure bill in place and maybe some projects you could call attention to in that area. What are you hearing right now? And, you know, it's crazy too, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but then we're in the middle of a pandemic. It's a juggling act right now. So talk to me about that, Jim.
Right now, one of the biggest projects, I think, that as far as infrastructure goes, that's kind of being talked about is a cap over top of I-95 in Wilmington. Some prominent legislators in that area brought to the attention of the general public that when I-95 was constructed 50 or 60 years ago, it kind of split the city of Wilmington in half, and they wanted to put a cap over the top of it. And I'm not sure what they mean by cap. What I'm hearing is that they want to build essentially a superstructure over top of I-95 and make it a park. And it's going to, you know, act as a weather shield for I-95 and also reunite the city. And they want to tap into the infrastructure money to build that. And that, to me, it seems like a monumental undertaking, especially because right now we're working on the restored corridor project in Wilmington. Keywood Infrastructure is out there using all union labor force to rehab I-95 for about 6 miles that runs through the city of Wilmington. So to me, that's one of the real big ones that they're talking about here in Delaware that would mean a lot of jobs. I can't even imagine how one would go about building a park over top of an interstate. Like I said, the only thing that comes to my mind is it's a very large superstructure that they're going to put dirt on top of. But just the prospect of it, yeah. I speak to some contractors about it, and they don't even know how it would be engineered. But
yeah,
you know, it seems like it would be really innovative project. I've seen some things like that overseas and been done in other countries. And I think it would be, like I said, a real good project for the workforce here in Delaware. Other than that, you know, DelDOT is always putting out projects. So we're starting to do a lot of these great separated intersections in Delaware now. So they're trying to keep traffic collisions to a real minimum by elevating one direction of traffic at these intersections. Especially, you get a lot of beach traffic, and the highways are just a mess in the summertime and on holidays. So they're doing what they can to try to alleviate the traffic. And those projects usually come in between $50 and $80 million, and I look for a bunch more of those to happen once the infrastructure money actually starts rolling through.
That park over the interstate, I'm trying to get a visual on that. That's amazing. And one of the questions, you kind of answered it. You said this is done in other countries and they kind of want to do it here, but the first time in America? Is that how I understand this?
I'm not sure if it would be the first time in America. it, to me, it's almost like, I don't know if you're familiar with these like critter crossings that happen when they do these major projects where they kind of put a little bridge over and they either have it enclosed with a tunnel or they plant, you know, trees and grass over top of it. So it's a way for animals to cross over top of a road. I've never seen one done in the United States to this scale. I have seen overseas, you know, everybody's on the internet. You know, you see this in your feed sometimes in these weird construction projects. Guys replace a bridge in 24 hours. And you see these like parks that are built either on top of buildings or on top of existing roadways and stuff. And to me, when they start talking about this cap over Wilmington, it would be a project very similar to that.
Amazing. Just amazing. Keep me apprised on that, because if that goes through, it sounds like it will. But that's definitely one to watch.
I know that our congressional delegation in D.C. has been lobbying for this project for the better part of a year at this point. So I'm interested to see if they can get the money cut loose. So, like I said, the trades in Delaware are absolutely an advocate for this project. I would love to see it built and built Union.
How many jobs, maybe it's premature right now, but in your estimation, I mean, you've been doing this for a number of years. How many jobs, especially in operating engineers, would this create if they go forward with it?
Well, I mean, so if we use the I-95 Restored Corridor project as like a barometer, that project right now has about 25 operating engineers on it, and that's about 4 miles of roadway. One of those grade separated intersections, we had 75, 80 guys on one of those. So I would say maybe 50, and without seeing any kind of the plans or what the scope would be, at max, I would say 50 operating engineers would probably be the right number to staff a project like that. But total tradesmen, you're probably talking upwards of 200 or 300 at least.
Yeah.
Between laborers, carpenters, iron workers. There would have to be some electrical work there. I mean, it would
It'd
be, like I said, a really, really substantial project. And it would be a long-term project due to traffic constraints and not, you know, you can't work over top of live highways. They're going to have to close lanes down and there's going to be weather issues. So it would be a project that not only has a high dollar value and a high labor force, it would also have a long duration, which is really nice for the members to tell, you know, when you call a guy and say, hey, I got a job with XYZ contracting and that job's going to last 42 months. That's a really good project to have coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And think about the guys that have like 25, 26 years are probably going to say, well, you know what, this is what I could retire on after this, because this is how long it's going to go.
Part of my job with Local 542 is dispatching projects. And when we do get a project, especially these road projects, they tend to have a lot more longevity than a building project. That's what a lot of guys say. That 25, 30 year member, he says, man, if I hit this one, that when I'm done, I'm done. This is it. This is my pathway to retirement.
And Jim, it's a nice way to cap off your work as an operating engineer, right?
Yeah, they get to go out on top with the completion of a big project and something that they can be proud of when they are retired, driving up and down the road, and they can say, that was the last one I did. Look how good it turned out.
Yeah, good stuff. Jim, one more question here before we go. I'd like to touch on the political. You mentioned a little bit of the politics involved with this project if it goes forward, but what's your assessment of the political environment there? Because obviously you got to work with politicians. You're working with government money on this kind of thing. But how does that look in that area?
We're not too bad. We've got a strong core group of legislators that support labor here in Delaware. We have an electrician who's the chair of the Senate Labor Committee. We have a union sprinkler fitter who's the chair of the House Labor Committee here in Delaware. And a lot of legislators support organized labor, and the legislators that don't 100% support organized labor, they tend to support the working class in Delaware. Obviously, you always have the outliers that they don't want to do anything to help anybody, and we won't name names, but you know they're out there, and there's a divide. Fortunate, without getting into too much detail, because we're not there yet. We are going to be participating in some legislation this year that could really mean a lot to the men and women organized labor here in Delaware. In the last couple of years, we've done a lot. We do that, get an apprentice bill passed and signed by the governor. So now any prevailing wage project in the state of Delaware is required that a contractor participates in apprentice programs. So we're going to be doing some more work with that this year. We're going to be doing some more stuff with prevailing wage. We've been really leaning hard on our partners in Legislative Hall, and we've been successful for the last 4 or 5 years with getting meaningful legislation that not only forwards organized labor's agenda, but protects the working class in the state of Delaware from stuff like workplace fraud, worker misclassification, failure to pay prevailing wages, all those things that, they exist. And I think kind of peripherally, a lot of members and contractors on the union side are aware of them, but because of our contracts and our relationship with our contractors, we don't have to worry about them. But there's an unlevel playing field when it comes to bidding some of this government work that some of these contractors haven't been doing the right thing. So now we have stuff like a contractor registration where every contractor that works in the state of Delaware needs to be on this registration list. So they have to have a registered agent. So, if the Department of Labor or Revenue or somebody needs to check them out, there's a person that is designated for that company that they can reach out to. And it's all things to just kind of help keep everybody on the same level, that nobody has more of an unfair advantage than anyone else, that when these bids are opened up, you're not going to see a 40%, price difference from the union to the non-union bidder because the wages are the same. So now everybody's looking and everybody's watching what's going to be happening, especially when you start talking about all this infrastructure money. I think the days of some of these kind of CD dealings are kind of, they're going away. And we look forward to even further eliminating that and forwarding our agenda for our members.
Certainly good to hear. Jim, love talking to you. Let's keep in touch in the new year, which is obviously right around the corner. But I'm real curious about that park over the interstate. That's what I definitely watch. And also, the political environment that's always at play. So you take care, my friend. Jim Ashone, business agent, 542 International Union of Operating Engineers, IUOE542.com. You take care, my brother, all right?
All right, thanks, Flash. Have a good new year.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to check in with the Teamsters in Milwaukee. Thomas Bennett is the Secretary Treasurer of Local 200, and he's on right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialist, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And that would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Milwaukee right now. Joining us on our live line is Mr. Thomas Bennett. And Mr. Bennett is with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, third generation Teamster. Been in the union for about 30 years, duly elected officer of Local 200 for 5 3-year terms, and starting this Saturday, it's his 6th 3-year term. Man, you are on a roll, my man. Hey, Thomas Bennett, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Happy New Year to you and your listeners. So,
There you go. There you go. Happy New Year to all the International Brotherhood of Teamster members. Very, very powerful union, 1.3 million members nationally. And I'm reading you have, what is it, around 4,000 members in southeastern Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yes, it is. We our jurisdiction is from Wisconsin state line up to around Oshkosh area, which is about 50 miles north of Milwaukee, 60 miles north of Milwaukee. We go as far as west as Madison. Very diverse local union. We have members in construction, food industry, police officers, fire and rescue, warehousing. So, yeah, very diverse union.
You know, that's interesting. I want to talk about that for a minute, because when I say the word Teamster, and I'm sure if I go grab 10 people on the street and say Teamster, well, you're a truck driver. And that's kind of where it is. You're in the UAW, you build cars. You know, it's not like that anymore. There's a lot of diversity in unions, and you've been involved for, what, three decades now. When did this start to happen here, Tom? Maybe you can walk us through this.
I think one of the things is the Teamsters organization, to your point, we've always thought about Teamsters as truck drivers. You know, my dad was a Teamster. He was a truck driver, right? And it changed probably four decades ago, where the diversity to bring in other industries or other trades into the Teamsters really took place. The Teamsters have been around since 1903, so we haven't always been truck drivers and with horse and carriage back then, but we also represented factory workers in the early 1900s. You know, Local 200 became in existence in 1935, and we look at our base of employers, only about 50% of them were related to transportation, even though the bulk of the membership came out of transportation, trucking, freight. We represented workers in dairy, many, many other industries.
What about growth here? I mean, since you've been so diverse, what's the outlook? And you know what? This is a two-part question. You got COVID going on right now. You got this pandemic. Teamsters, essential workers, frontline. Talk to me about that, Tom.
Well, one of the things that became very apparent when the pandemic hit was how important the service industry was. Our local union, 50% of it or better, is related to the service industry, grocery warehousing. One of our largest employers in Local 200 is a grocery warehouse. And it was an automatic, they need people, okay? We're always looking for people in these type of industries, the service industries. When the pandemic hit, they needed 150, 200 people additional to service the customer, because everybody was going to stores. Everybody was hoarding food product, hoarding paper towels, and the stores were running out of product. Now we're running out of workers. We need more workers to continue to service these stores, these locations. So there is a worker shortage. We have to energize the youth of America to take a look at these jobs, these service industry jobs. They're good paying jobs with good benefits. Do you need a college education to do these jobs? No, you don't. What you need is a good mind, a good working ethic. Come to work and you can make some really good money.
I'm hearing a lot about this truck driver shortage. Maybe you can address that. And what are you doing to attract people? Because there are jobs available. And as a Teamster, you're going to be paid very well. You're going to have great benefits. So talk to me about outreach. And, you know, you're in a union-friendly area, especially Milwaukee. So what's the answer to that, Tom?
So a couple of things. Yes, there is a driver shortage, and the driver shortage is based on a couple of things. So the baby boomers, which I'm a baby boomer, we're retiring, right? So when right. people retire, you have to replace them. And getting people into the trucking industry is partly about educating them, right? To learn how to drive a truck. I learned how to drive a truck by, there it is, get behind it, grab the steering wheel, get driving down the road. Those days are long gone, okay? So we have to go to the high schools. We have to educate these juniors and seniors that are looking at a career path that may not include college or may include college, but explain to them there are trades out there, there's opportunities out there. If you're going to go to a technical school, there are truck driver driving courses there. We're also working with area youth groups, area
outreach groups to educate their people about, hey, there's these opportunities out there to drive truck. We have some of our Teamster employers that have truck driving programs in freight and in ready mix. So we try to tell these people, hey, here's these opportunities to learn how to drive a truck. We'll teach you. We're even going to pay you to teach you, all right? So, yeah, these employers are saying, like, we have to change our mindset. We just can't put a help wanted ad out there, and hopefully somebody looks at that ad and gets attracted and comes applies at us. Now we have to communicate and educate and train people to learn how to drive trucks.
Tom, talk to me about the politics. Wisconsin's been kind of interesting the last decade with your governor there, well, former governor, Scott Walker. I know you got a union-friendly guy in there. The legislature, not so much the case, but how are you navigating through that? Maybe you can bring us up to speed. I know Milwaukee's pretty strong union, right?
Yeah, Milwaukee is very, very strong union town. You know, this Milwaukee has always been a strong, strong union town based on the United Auto Workers, their brewery workers, construction trades, operating engineers. So it's always been a strong town. But we have to be able to have conversations with people to get them involved and to grow the union and have those conversations. We look forward to talking to the community groups. We have to look at the future. It's very, very important.
Tom, if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about the changes within the Teamsters here. You're going to have new leaders coming up in March, I believe. President Hoffa decided not to run. He's retiring. Any thoughts on that? What's the take on that right now, especially in the Milwaukee area?
Well, I think one of the things that's very, very important is to recognize the service that General President Hoffa has given the organization over the last 23 years, almost 25 years. The Hoffa name is signatory with the Teamsters, right? It's a very, very embedded name in the Teamsters. I personally wish General President Hoffa a good life on his retirement. He served our organization well. We've got new leadership coming in. It's a fresh leadership. Sean O'Brien out of Boston, young guy, energetic. He's got strong messaging. Sean O'Brien will be our general president right now. He's general president-elect. Coming in with Sean O'Brien is also general secretary-elect Fred Zuckerman out of Louisville, Kentucky. Both gentlemen are good men. They're committed to their union. They're committed to the membership, and they're committed to growing this organization. We have to have fresh ideas. If we continue to work on the old premise about this is how a union operates, this is how a union conducts itself, we're going to become extinct. I think with the new leadership coming in, the new general executive board, I think we're really going to have some fresh ideas, really work hard on organizing, bringing new members in, and reestablishing the Teamster message and what a Teamster is all about. To your point you made before, you know, you say, well, Teamsters being truck drivers. Well, we're much more diverse than just truck drivers, and we have to get out there and say, hey, you want to be part of one of the strongest labor organizations in the country? Let's talk about being a Teamster. So I look forward to working with the new administration when March 2022 rolls around.
And I know Amazon is in your sights, and we talked about that with one of your brothers out in the West Coast, and I want to touch on that. Maybe next time we get on. We're running out of time today, but there's a great opportunity to get membership up, especially if they organize at Amazon. That's not going to be easy, but hey, you know what? You're a Teamster. You're used to that kind of thing, aren't you?
Absolutely. You know, you may want to kick us down, but we're going to get up, and we're going to get up stronger. Amazon's tried to kick us down a couple places, especially down there in Alabama. There's going to be another election down there. We get back up, and we get running. We look forward to those opportunities at those Amazon sites across the country.
I love the fight in you, brother. Thomas Bennett on our live line. He's Secretary-Treasurer of Local 200. Website is Teamsters Local 200.com. Teamsters, that's plural, TeamstersLocal200.com out of Milwaukee. You stay strong, stay safe, and let's talk in the new year, okay?
Absolutely. Pleasure to be on your show.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Office of Professional Employees and the Insulators. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.